to the splendor, the spectacle, the sparkling sensation, where the romance, the comedy, and the thrill of Disney fantasies come to electric life.
And as our friend Jiminy said, welcome. Welcome to the Disney Nerds Podcast, a place each week where like-minded people get together to discuss all things Disney. We'll help you get your Disney fix on.
And now, the Magic Kingdom proudly presents, in a million points of musical light, the magical worlds of Disney. In spectral magic.
Hello, and welcome to the Disney Nerds Podcast. This is episode number 54. This is the first show since we returned. We all returned from the Walt Disney World Resort. We had a blast down there. And this week, unfortunately, Ed couldn't be with us. So this week we have Jennifer. Jennifer?
Hey, it's kind of bittersweet to be talking to you guys from Cincinnati.
I know, right? So, seems like just the other day we were all talking face-to-face.
In front of the Epcot Fountain of Nations. I know, but good to talk to you still.
I was listening to episode 53 and us talking in front of the Fountain of Nations, and you could hear the music in the background, and I'm like, oh my God, I wish I was back there. So
I
was sitting in my office listening to it at work, so I'm like, oh my God, I just want to die.
And still always a pleasure.
So, and this week we also have Sam with us. Sam, how's it going?
It's going great. And fortunately, I had my recorder with me for most of the time that we were together. So I got lots of things that you said, Jimmy, and I plan on bringing them out when you least expect it.
Just be careful what clips you use and which clips you don't.
We have lots of clips from our evening with Yeehaw Bob. We have lots of clips from our scavenger hunt. We have clips from the food and wine. We have clips from the first ride on the Mine Train. We have clips from the Haunted Mansion and Pirates of the Caribbean. There's tons of things that we have to go through here. It's wow.
Well, you're not allowed to play any clips that were recorded after I had three beers.
So when you think about three beers at the Food and Wine Festival this year, since they're small beers, is that really six?
Yes. Okay. Okay. I agree.
Another time.
So,
in fact, I know that we'd love to get through all of the details that we went through, Food and Wine, but there was another pretty cool thing that we did as a team, as a group, that maybe not a lot of people know about.
What's that?
That's the Boardwalk Ballyhoo Guided Tour.
That's correct. Yeah. And that's what this show's going to be all about. So while we were down there, we went and did a tour of the Boardwalk Resort, and it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. Sam grabbed a lot of audio from there. So we're going to make this show all about Boardwalk Resort and the tour there.
So let's touch on the tour first, the Boardwalk Ballyhoo Guided Tour. As you mentioned, it's a free tour.
It is offered on Wednesday through Saturday every single week, and our awesome tour guide says that they will be there every single day, Wednesday through Saturday. They will show up, and if you want to take the tour, they will be there for you. So if you are around Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, it's really kind of cool. So it starts at 9 o'clock in the morning at the Bellevue Lounge inside the Boardwalk Hotel, into the Boardwalk Resort. So yeah, it's definitely something I would suggest doing. I had heard of it before, but hadn't taken the time to do it and really enjoyed it.
I thought it was so, you know what, I thought it was so interesting. The guys over there do a really, really good job. I don't remember their names. Do you remember the names?
I remember Norb. Who was actually not the...
Jim? It was Jim. Jim from Philadelphia. Jim was very, very knowledgeable, very nice guy, very enthusiastic. I really enjoyed it. It was one of the things, you know, that I'd never done before, and we try and make every trip we do to Walt Disney World different, and this is something that we definitely can put on the list that we had never done before, and it was completely brand new.
And one of the things I thought was so cool, the manager Joe said, and this kind of sets up the tour a little bit, so I think he said, every resort tells a story. And I remember saying that, and I think that's one of the things we love so much about Disney parks is the backstories, and even the resorts tell a story. So I thought that was really cool to kind of learn the secrets and the backstory behind the boardwalk.
I completely agree. So with all that being said, we're going to turn it over to Sam, and Sam's going to take us and play some of the audio and take us on the tour. And I hope all you guys get to enjoy it.
Remember, the tour is free. It starts at 9 a.m. And don't forget, the boardwalk is very close to the back door to Epcot, the International Gateway entrance. So there's no reason why you can't grab the tour and then, you know, take a little stroll into Epcot. So I had my audio recorder with me, recorded the whole thing. So that said, I have 2.5 hours of tours from Disney resorts, but mostly the boardwalk.
You got 2 minutes.
2 minutes?
As Jen said earlier, the tour starts in the Bellevue Lounge. Now, if you're familiar with the Epcot Resort area, the Swan Dolphin, Yacht and Beach, and Boardwalk, you're familiar with the boardwalk itself. Now, the Bellevue Lounge isn't on the boardwalk. In fact, it's on the second floor across from the lobby. So if you're entering from the main entrance to the boardwalk, registration's to your left, the Bellevue Lounge is on your right. Don't be late. That's where the tour starts. Let's pick it up there.
So somebody's Sam.
That's me.
Hi, Sam.
How you doing?
I'm Joe. Nice
Joe,
to meet you.
Joe, absolutely. Nice. How'd you end up here, right? You were all those places. How'd
so
you end up?
My background, I actually worked, did our Disney College program, if you're not familiar with that, but we have a student college program. Currently, we're bringing in about 7,500 students at a time. I did mine back in 87, and there was 500 students at a time. So it was a much smaller program back then. Again, only two parks at that point. Only had us and Epcot, or Magic Kingdom and Epcot. But worked here, got it in my blood, but went back and did graduate school, went back and finished up, and then actually worked in higher education for about 20 years.
Oh, wow.
But worked on the higher education side of bringing students down for our college program. So always kind of stayed connected, stayed a part of it, wanted to come back to Disney, and about 5 years ago I had an opportunity to come back again, started out as the theme doorman at Wilderness Lodge. So much like your friends over here, I actually was over at Wilderness Lodge. And did our tour over there and
right.
was involved. And they got a chance to move into leadership at the front desk over here at Boardwalk. We came up to Boardwalk about 3.5 years ago, so I've been here ever since.
And you brought the tour with you because it didn't exist, right?
Yeah, we didn't have a tour. And that was one of the things after doing it over there for so long, I said, gosh, every resort can tell a story. We all have a history. And just felt like after I'd been here for about 6 months, said, we have a story here that's fantastic. But everyone walks by every day and they don't see it. And so what we wanted to do is try to bring that experience here. So we created that tour a couple years ago now, and have been able to get Jim and Norv and a couple folks ready to be able to give this to y'all. And I just think it's a unique opportunity to see those things that you see every single day that you've walked by, now to know a little bit more about.
Yep.
And these guys are a wealth of knowledge and information. They're so wonderful. We had a shell of kind of what we did. And since then, they've added on pieces and parts and more and more and all kinds of stuff that I didn't know about. And that's the beauty of it, is every time somebody goes on it, they share a little bit back with us and a little bit more for us to look at, and there's things that we can then bring back to it. And so, I laugh. I think when it was originally structured, it was about a 35-minute tour. Right now, we're probably about right at an hour, 45 minutes to an hour, depending on how things go. And so it's up to you guys how that experience and what you want to do. But and we can make it longer.
If you're really interested.
So,
I think 3 hours is my max.
Thank you all for coming out today.
Thank you, Joe.
We enjoyed it. And
appreciate it.
It's a really good time. And just let us know if you have any questions.
Hey, right? Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you
so much.
Thank you. Have fun.
Thank you, Joe.
We're all going to go. Let's stand up and get back here. You met Norb, I'm Jim, and we'll be your tour guides today on our Ballyhoo tour.
Ballyhoo.
Ballyhoo. Any idea what Ballyhoo is?
Sounds like a rallying cry.
Well, if you looked in the dictionary, it would say something like an excited commotion, an attention-getting demonstration. I like to give an example of, come on over, folks, we have a free show starting right here, right now. Come on, see what we're going to do. This is the one your friends are talking about. This is the one you've read about. It's starting right here, right now, and it's all free. 1920s, Atlantic City. Outside most of the establishments on the boardwalk, you would have had a bar trying to attract people out of the crowd to come to their establishment. They threw the word free around a lot. Getting inside the establishment wasn't always free. The barker's spiel was free, but the rest of it had a fee. But that's Ballyhoo. We're going to have a tour today. It's going to be 45 minutes to an hour, roughly. We're going to start here, go through the boardwalk, go out to our pool, and then go out onto the boardwalk. Disney's Boardwalk Resort opened July 1st, 1996. The architect, Robert Stern. Robert Stern is a world-renowned architect. He's presently the dean of the Yale School of Architecture. He designed the boardwalk. He grew up in Brooklyn, so he was probably very familiar with all the Northeast seashore towns. And this is his interpretation of, and I think it's really a conglomeration of a lot of places. In Atlantic City itself, you would have seen more high-rise, big brick hotels as opposed to this. But this is very typical of the Northeast seashore. Certainly in the smaller towns, you would have seen hotels or rooming houses that were like this. But he had done a number of hotels for Disney. He did the Ambassador Hotel in Disney Tokyo. He did the Newport Bay Club in Disney Paris. And right across our lake here, he did both the Yacht Club and Beach Club. So he has a lot of experience. He was also very involved in the creation of Celebration, if anyone's familiar with Celebration.
Sure.
Well, he was involved in the original planning. That was originally part of the Epcot plan, but it ended up being separated from Walt's idea. 1920s, Atlantic City was really the place to go, certainly on the East Coast, and people were coming from far and wide to go to Atlantic City. Any big star at that time, if he didn't appear in Atlantic City, he wasn't a big star. Broadway shows premiered in Atlantic City. Right around 1920, the only way he got there was by train. So this was not for the weekend getaway. People usually went there for a period of time. Initially, it was probably, if you didn't have a lot of money, you were going there. There were certainly a lot of other hotels in Atlantic City besides the grand hotels. Atlantic City was the closest place to Philadelphia, and that's how it was created. Two investors decided to build a railroad from Camden to Atlantic City, and at the end of the railroad, they built a hotel. The United States Hotel, 600 rooms, was the biggest hotel in the United States.
Wow.
And that's how Atlantic City started from that. But here we are in the lounge of a typical grand hotel. I guess people would come to the lounge and turn on the television. They didn't have television.
Right.
So then they went to look at their computer.
No.
Now, okay, smartphones. No, they didn't have any of it. What do you think they did back then? Talk! Can you imagine? Can you imagine going into a hotel and talking to someone? Yes, that would have been very common. There would have been a number in the big hotels. There would have been a number of lounges. There, certainly the lobbies were big. Living close to Atlantic City and growing up in a time and having visited Atlantic City when I was young, I talked from kind of firsthand experience of what it felt like in Atlantic City. Certainly in the 50s, which it was still before the casinos, and it still had some of the touch of the old Atlantic City. But in the lounge, yeah, they would have talked. If you look on the shelves here, you'll see a lot of different things that they might have done. Books. Every hotel would have either had a library or had books scattered around. You would have read books. Another thing you'll see, game boards. 20s and 30s was the golden age of games in America. Having worked in the game industry for a little while, I know that to be true. You'll see games that go to the head of the class, feed them, tell it to the judge. There's a bunch of different game boards around. And you really can't talk about Atlantic City without mentioning Monopoly. Monopoly didn't come out until 1935. Charles Darrow, a Philadelphian, created the game, supposedly. There's a question about that. Actually, a woman in 1903 created a game called the Real Estate Game. Her name was Maggie. And when Parker Brothers bought the rights in 1935 to Monopoly, they also bought the rights to her game, too. So they must have seen a connection.
Ah.
I think he took that game and put the Atlantic City streets on it. Well, that's a huge game. I think the numbers are, it's never sold less than 2 million games a year from the time, from the year it came out.
That's crazy.
There's no other game even close to that. Other things they would have done.
They listened to the radio.
We're hearing radios. 1920s, radios would have been a huge thing. In 1920, you couldn't go into the store and buy a radio. You had a crystal set. And a crystal set you made yourself. You got some wire and a little unit that would hold the crystal and an earpiece. And if you were in the right place at the right time, you would get reception to one radio station.
Yep.
It wasn't until 1922.
From Pittsburgh, by the way.
The vacuum. Yeah, it's true.
Absolutely.
First broadcast was in Pittsburgh. 1922, the vacuum tube came out, and that allowed the present-day radios. That's when you could go into the stores and buy a radio. They say by 1929, 60 million people had bought radios. So that was a big thing. And to go, certainly in the early 20s, to go into a hotel and hear a radio would have been kind of spectacular. It would be like expecting a big screen TV today in your hotel. And then there are the kinds of things you see, checkers and card games and all sorts of things. They might have gotten the newspaper probably a day late in Atlantic City, or certainly early on. But they're the kinds of things they would have done in the lamp. Now we're going to start to walk. And you'll see as we walk on the walls, game boards, books, other artifacts, these little photos, you'll see most of them are photos of game pieces. Many from Monopoly. I like to point out in this picture, this is obviously a seaside dining experience, and I like to point out all the t-shirts and shorts and flip-flops that are in there. In Atlantic City at that time, going there as a child in the 50s, we had to get dressed. You didn't go on the boardwalk without being dressed up. And that would have been very, very typical. In fact, most of the day, people on the boardwalk or in the hotels would have been dressed. It just wasn't a casual kind of place. I'm going to walk over here.
We're making our way from the Bellevue Lounge towards the elevators for the boardwalk in.
I'd like to point to these two pictures. They give you a pretty good idea of what Atlantic City might have been like around the 20s. The top one gives you a great picture of the beach. Most of those big buildings, if not all of those big buildings, were hotels. And you can see they're a little different than this hotel. But that's the right on the beach, on the boardwalk, you would have had many hotels like that. Here you can see the beach, the boardwalk, and a hotel set back. A lot of hotels initially had big lawns. Reason for that was, first of all, to separate them from the ocean, further back from the beach and the ocean. But secondly, people had to walk across the lawn, took the sand off their feet, and kept it out of the lobby of the hotel. Huh? And somebody just pointed this out a week or two ago, the store selling furs. My strongest impression of being on the boardwalk in around the 1950 as a kid was seeing people middle of summer at night in furs.
Wow.
This was really a place to see and be seen.
Yeah.
Near the elevators, there's a display of postcards.
Postcards. Just like this has a story behind it, but postcards came out in 1857. They were patented by a fellow from Philadelphia. They were just plain cards, white on both sides. And at first, they didn't think they would take off. Up till then, people would write on paper and put it in an envelope. They didn't want anybody reading what they were writing. But then people got the idea, well, if I write on there where I am, I'm going to impress a lot of people before that card gets to where it's going. And it started to get so popular that the post office in the late 1800s decided to come out with a postal card. And the postal card had the postage printed right on it. And that was a great idea for the post office, but they made all other cards illegal. You could only get a postcard from the post office for about 25 years. It was right around 1900 that they eased up and let other people. And that's when various forms of printing were coming into play and picture postcards were becoming popular. The story behind these cards, they were donated to Disney by someone who was working in construction on building this building. They were from his grandmother or great-grandmother, had them in a box somewhere, and he thought Disney could use them, and they obviously made a great display. Has anybody been to the boardwalk before? I like to, people who haven't been here, I like to show them out here. Let's just go out here for a second, just like to see you, show you a part that most people don't see.
Yeah. Wow. You're right.
Hear the silence.
If you go straight past the elevators for the boardwalk in, there's a door that leads outside.
Real quiet. We actually have a, behind this building is another pool that most people don't see. We call it the quiet pool, and it's only for adults. You can see these white picket fences over here. They're cottages, as you might have had at the seashore towns. Certainly all through history along the New Jersey coast especially. They are loft apartments. And there's a whole bunch of different kinds of rooms you can get here. But I like to show people, you'll see a lot of weddings.
We're headed back inside the same door with our attention across from the elevators.
So I just like to show people that. We're going to move on. Just a quick look at some of the grand hotels. Somebody had put a conglomeration of hotels in one that one of them I know is the Marlborough Blenheim, which was one of the most famous hotels. The Claridge is another one. I'm not sure what all of them are there, but they wouldn't have been that close together, but they would have been on the beach.
Horses on the beach common?
Horse back then, sure. That was the main. 1920, less than 20% of the people in America had cars. So cars was not an easy mode of transportation in 1920. By the end of the 20s, it was. The Model T, in 1909, the Model T cost $1,200. By 1929, it cost $295. So mass production had a big impact. Don't forget, this is a time, the 20s, the roaring 20s, as they speak about it, is a time after World War I. The war was over, the factories were all converting over to consumer goods. They were making vacuum cleaners, washing machines, all those kinds of things. And everybody had a job. So there was a lot of money out there and a lot of money for recreation and getting away to Atlantic City. You'll see in some of the literature, we talk interchangeably about Atlantic City and Coney Island. Two different places. Atlantic City was really a destination. I like to compare it today to going to Las Vegas, where you have to make plans, you've got to take a trip, and you're going to make reservations and go there. Coney Island, you could go on the subway.
Right.
So and until 1923, Coney Island's beach was private. They didn't build a boardwalk until 1923, which was about 50 years after Atlantic City had a boardwalk. So a completely different kind of place. Bring it down this way.
We're headed past the Bellevue Lounge back towards the lobby, but we're going to stop in the hallway first.
Bellevue is beautiful view, right?
Beautiful view, that's it.
Yeah, all right. Wanted to make sure.
And if you go out on the porch,
you'll see what?
See a beautiful view.
Got it.
These are some prints from back in the day. Harper's Bazaar was a big magazine back then, and I think a lot of these prints probably came from that. Picture different kinds of houses, buildings, boarding houses, piers that you would have seen anywhere from Coney Island into anywhere along the New Jersey coast. I mean, these are not all Atlantic City. I like to point out some of a building like this. The people couldn't afford to stay in the Grand Hotel, stayed in a boarding house. Boarding house was you rented a room, had a common bathroom, a lot less expensive. You could still go enjoy the boardwalk and enjoy the beach. But when you get time, there's so much you can look at in detail that we don't have time to do on the tour.
That's a three-hour tour.
All right. But we're going to head on.
So we're headed down the hallway closer to the main lobby. On the right-hand side, there's some penny arcade machines. And on the left are two large paintings that the Imagineers had done.
Disney Imagineers, their concept of what this hotel would have looked like back in 1920. When you go outside, you'll see the curb, the boardwalk. They've added some features like the Ferris wheels and things, but you can see the people on the boardwalk are dressed. These are rolling chairs. Rolling chairs are very common even today in Atlantic City. Someone would push them. The ultimate way of being seen, you would pay someone to...
So is that a fancy wheelchair? What is it?
It's really just a two-person seat.
Okay.
It's
a stroller.
A stroller for adults.
Think of the bikes.
Okay.
But then a little bit nicer.
Like the bikes.
Like
all right.
Tandem bike, but nobody's pedaling.
Yeah.
That's kind of the...
Yeah, they were just... Actually, in the other picture, I don't remember rolling chairs like that. I do remember them like they have them in the other picture. But the big thing there would have been lights. 1920s. Less than a third of the country had electricity. So to go to some place that was all lit up like that, Atlantic City was. And if you haven't seen our boardwalk at night, you really want to make a trip here to see it, because there's entertainment, there's street performers on the boardwalk, a lot of things happening, and it's all lit up, and there's usually a pretty big crowd out there. But that's their impression of this. You can see on the front of the buffet various roller coasters and other rides that would have been around at the time. From doing research, I can tell you that they were all in Coney Island. They were not in Atlantic City. Coney Island was really a conglomeration of a number of amusement parks that were right on the beach.
Okay.
Atlantic City, all the amusements were out on piers. They had the boardwalk, and then they had piers that extended out into the ocean, some of them very far out into the ocean. And in Atlantic
City.
What's that?
That a roller coaster I can see that spins around. What does that
spins.
Do?
This spins.
And they sit on it.
Most people say, why are there only women? And in doing some reading about that, there's two versions of this ride. This was like a big pie plate, really, and
it's what
spun
it looks
around.
Like. Okay.
And people would sit in the middle, and the last one in the middle won.
Okay.
The men's version had a platform in the middle, and you got thrown off of the platform. Yes. So this was the gentle version. But I get that question a lot. How come only women on that ride?
Got it.
Actually, we look here, mutoscopes. I think some of you guys were looking at it. This particular one isn't working right now. I make it jammed very easily. This one does. So if you haven't looked at it, take a quick look in there. I tell the kids that this is the YouTube of 1920.
Of course, he's referring to the penny machines with the crank where you could watch the video.
Just another view of the boardwalk as the Disney Imagineers imagined it. These rolling chairs are how I remember the rolling chairs. They were wicker. And some were like this, and some of them might have had a higher back, like a clamshell type back. But they were just pushed by hand, and it was kind of the ultimate way of being seen. And this buffet is exactly the same as the other one. We're going to head out here.
Now we're headed to the main lobby of the boardwalk. Now, if you're on the boardwalk itself, this is directly up the steps, or if you're arriving via car to stay, this is the first thing that you'll see. As soon as you get to the main lobby, you'll see the carousel. Look up.
Our Hippocampus Electrolier.
Say that again.
Hippocampus Electrolier.
Okay.
Hippocampus, from Greek mythology. Hippocampus is half horse, half sea creature. Like to say our sea creature is the tail of a mermaid. Would have been seen in Greek mythology pulling the chariot of Poseidon through the waves. If you have time, if you look very closely, you could probably find a hidden Mickey or two up there. The hippocampus is covered in 22 karat gold leaf, weighs over 3,000 pounds.
Wow.
It's the largest chandelier in any Disney hotel. Up above, the Electrolier. Thomas Edison came out with the electric light bulb in New Jersey. And when he did, he thought, up till then, chandeliers had candles. And he thought that it needed a different name with electricity. And he coined the term electrolier. Obviously, we don't hear it today, so it never really caught on. The electrolier is up on top. You'll see hand-blown glass and some Austrian crystal. Story about the glass ball at the bottom. When that was first put up, it was filled with artifacts and sand. It was a time capsule, supposed to be open 50 years from 1996.
Okay. And I don't see any sand in it.
The sand started to leak out. And at that point, they took everything out of it and just left the ball.
That was a great idea.
I'm looking over here at the Disney Vacation Club. The Boardwalk was the second Disney Vacation Club, and it was the first for dual use. It was the first that had half hotel and half vacation club. What was the first Disney Vacation Club?
Saratoga Springs.
Well, it was called the Disney Vacation Club.
Disney Vacation Club Resort. That's the first time I've gotten the right answer.
There you
Most
go.
Most people say Old Key West. It was changed to Old Key West when they built Boardwalk. Or otherwise, they'd be having Disney Vacation Club number 2, Disney Vacation Club number 3. And they thought the names were a little bit nicer. We're going to look at our carousel. In the night, right around 1900, carousels were a very big thing in America. From 1880 to 1930, there were over 4,000 carousels made in America. Today, there's less than 400, and there are less than 150 are exactly the same as they were made. This particular carousel, if you look at the flag on the top, it says M.C. Ilions Supreme. The M.C. Ilions was a master wood carver in Coney Island, and he was known for carving horses and the other parts that went into a carousel. And in 1909, he decided to go into business for himself. That carousel is his sample. So that carousel is from 1909. Disney bought it the year before Boardwalk opened specifically for that spot.
Wow.
They reconditioned it. It's a 44-horse carousel. Just read in the last week or two, that carousel, the third carousel that he made three of these Supreme carousels.
That model, that right there is what you're talking about.
That particular model, yes. He made three of them. The third one was in Pomona, California. When that, 50 years ago, when that amusement park closed, the carousel was put into storage. As we speak, it's being restored.
Nice.
By carousel experts. The third Ilions carousel is considered the finest carousel ever made in the world. And so it's being rebuilt. It hasn't been sold yet, so we don't know where it's going to go. But one of the Ilions carousels will be back in operation pretty soon. A few months ago, I saw one of the horses from another Ilions carousel on sale online for $73,000.
Whoa.
For one horse. For one horse. And a carousel maker would have made the horses, the decorative panels around the top edge. And if you're looking for hidden Mickeys, if you look closely,
there's
you
a
could,
whole horse full of them, isn't there?
There's more than one. But if you look closely, you could find the carousel. This carousel actually works. Every half hour or so, it goes on. You'll hear carousel music in this room right here. The horses go up and down. Disney completely reconditioned it. Disney bought it from at auction from his granddaughter. It hadn't been seen from the time he died till Disney got it. So that's a kind of special piece. We're going to start walking over this way.
We're headed into the main lobby near the registration desks.
A big lobby would have been another normal part of a grand hotel, sort of an extension of the land. I'm going to look up here over the desk. A lot of people come in here, many people have come on the tour. I never looked at them before. Well, they're pretty ornate frames, and actually they're not picture frames. We were just looking at some on the carousel. They're called rounding boards, and that's that decorative panel that's around the top. Disney took three rounding boards and put actual Disney castles in a real-life setting. Over here we have Disneyland in California, and in the middle we have Le Château de la Belle au Bois Dormant. Where could that be?
I'm thinking that's in France.
Good idea. One of the interesting things about building a castle in France
they have a whole bunch of real castles in France, so they had to make a real castle. This is not one of the Disney fake castles.
Got it, I understand.
And down here is our castle in the Magic Kingdom. Some interesting things. If you look closely at the bushes up there, you might find some other hidden Mickeys.
Yeah.
See it?
I can see one pretty easy.
If you look at the bushes down on the right side, a couple from the end,
there's Mickey.
You'll see an obvious hidden Mickey.
We're going to walk over this way.
After looking at the castles above the registration desks, we're walking through the lobby to the far corner where the fireplace is. This is where you'll find a roller coaster and a big elephant. What are those?
Flip-Flap Railroad.
Flip-Flap Railroad.
Was the first roller coaster with a loop. And it was quite an unusual roller coaster. There's a picture in the corner, by the way, of the real one.
Oh, boy.
That was built in 1895 in Coney Island.
Well, the loop on there is only 25 feet in diameter.
That's it.
And it's a perfect circle. The problem with that is, it's going to stay on. The problem is that in that car, the human body was taking 12 G's of force. A fighter pilot doesn't experience 11 G's. Whiplash, bad backs was very common. There's never been a roller coaster made with a true circle after that. They make them bigger, and it's always an ellipse or a corkscrew, and that reduces the load on a person by 75%. The other problem I was reading with this roller coaster, it's only a two-person car. Which had a leather belt for a seatbelt.
What was the name of it, you said?
Huh?
The
Flip-Flap Railroad. Actually, for those from Ohio, that was built originally in Toledo, Ohio.
Oh, really?
Okay. That's where they assembled it, and then they moved it to Coney Island. And it was there until 1902.
So I do have a question about the railroad.
Okay.
Is that Mary Poppins with the kids in line there?
I don't think so. I think that's somebody in the typical...
Disney stretching it a little bit.
Well, I'll go an interesting story even more than that. People paid 10 cents to go on that. They also paid 10 cents to sit at the bottom of the loop.
Wow.
They were sure, a lot of people were sure that somebody was going to fall out.
Oh, like just in the benches.
You paid to sit on the benches. And somebody brought up an interesting comparison to me a couple of weeks ago. This is like going to a NASCAR race. They're all waiting for a big.
You're absolutely right. You're spot on. You're spot on.
If we turn around, our chairs, our scary nanny chairs.
Scary nanny chairs.
From the middle 1800s.
That's a little crazy.
When a nanny would take her charge to an amusement park, say to the carousel, and it would have been improper for, they could put the child on the horse, but it would have been improper for the nanny to even sit side saddle. So, but the horse stand, and it would have been considered unsafe to stand on the carousel. So they came up with the idea of a chair. They would put that right on the carousel next to the horse that the child was on. And the nanny could sit there. Some nannies may have put the chair right next to the carousel, but from what I understand, it was mostly used on the carousel. And this is going back into the 1800s. Today, all carousels have a bench.
You heard?
All carousels have a bench today. Lucy! Everybody knows Lucy. Late 1800s, a man named Lafferty in Atlantic City was a real estate developer. And he thought, how am I going to attract people to my real estate development? Right next to the train station in Atlantic City, he built Lucy. Lucy's a six-story tall elephant building. Actually, he patented animal-shaped buildings, so he was the only one that could possibly make an animal-shaped building. And he made Lucy, six stories tall. Why it's named Lucy, don't really know, because it has tusks, and that's a male elephant. If you look at the top, the structure on the top is called a howdah. In India, that would have been for very wealthy people or used in battle. But if you look right at the peak of the howdah, you might find something hidden up there.
Ooh.
The easiest way to see it is if you stand back and look at the back one against the white background. If you can't really see it unless you're back far enough. If you look right against the white background, in the very tip of the There is a hidden Mickey.
That's cool.
And there's one on all four sides.
Cool. Hmm. Nice.
Did you know, last I heard, you worked in Margate.
Pardon?
For the last, like, 25 years, Lucy's been Margate, probably longer than that.
Well, Lucy was built in Atlantic City. Margate was actually South Atlantic City. When Margate and Ventnor were both annexed from Atlantic City originally. Well, they moved it from its original position. They didn't move it from Atlantic City to Margate. They moved it from where it was to two blocks away. It was right next to the train station. They also moved the train station to where it is now. It was on private land, and it was going to be destroyed. And there was a Save Lucy committee that was created, and they moved Lucy two blocks to city land. And one of the people on the Save Lucy committee, we like to say, is a man named Carpenter, and he is a DVC member. Disney Vacation Club member.
Cool.
And that was in the 60s that they completely redid Lucy. It was from falling apart. It looked more like what you see up here. It's pretty weather worn. I understand today it was just reconditioned in the last year or two.
Sure.
And today it looks pretty good.
I was going to say they had another Save the Lucy campaign over the last 15 years.
Oh, yeah.
They were trying to raise enough money.
Yeah. Well, in 1976 it became a national historic landmark, and the Park Service actually runs it now. We're going to go this way.
We headed down poolside?
Yeah.
Nice.
Just want to come against this wall. Just want to point out something here. This is obviously our lobby store. Dundee's Sundries. Nice that Disney came up with a nice rhyming name. Actually, we're going to hear more about Mr. Dundee in a minute. But,
okay.
The when Disney gets into theming, there's so many details around that you would never know what they were unless you heard the backstory. And we're going to tell you the backstory of Mr. Dundee.
We're headed through the lobby to the elevators for the DVC wing, which lead to the swimming pool.
If you're into hidden Mickeys, there's some Mickeys right here in the carpet, but on this carpet there's something else.
Yeah.
And if you follow the pixie dust around here, right over to here, and we have Tinkerbell. It's probably the most photographed thing on the tour. Because people have been over this carpet 100 times and never saw it. And there's two of them on every carpet by the elevators in the building.
That's cool.
It's a quick elevator ride down to the swimming pool.
This is our signature pool. Luna Park Pool. Luna Park being one of the parks presently at Coney Island. The Steeplechase and Luna Park are the two big parks. The history behind this, back in 1901, Pan American Exhibition, Buffalo, New York. Two men, Skip Dundee, we just saw his name on the on the store, and Frederick Thompson, who happens to be the proprietor of one of the stores on the boardwalk. They invented a ride called Trip to the Moon. And Trip to the Moon was a large cigar-shaped ride that you would go in. It would give you the impression of flying. One of the things I read about that it showed you flying over Niagara Falls as one place. But it would finally land on the moon. And when you got off, you were met by moon people. And what was the moon made of back then?
Cheese.
Cheese! The moon people handed you a piece of cheese. Sounds really hokey. But at the Pan American Exhibition, it was the most attended place there. 400,000 people rode it.
Wow.
And in those days, that was a big number. Well, Mr. Thompson and Mr. Dundee, there was a park in Coney Island called Sea Lion Park. And they decided to buy this park that had just gone out of business. And they were moving their ride to the park, this Trip to the Moon ride. And they renamed the park Luna Park. Luna being Latin for moon.
Got it.
So that's how it got the name Luna Park. Roller coasters. All the parks had roller coasters back then. On a typical roller coaster, you get in the car and go around the loops and twirls. On our roller coaster, you get on your keister.
Yeah.
It's called the Keister Coaster. And keister is German for run. And you come out through a clown's face. The clown's face, very common in those days. I can remember as a kid being on the boardwalk where you shoot water into the clown's mouth and a balloon would blow up.
Yep.
And if you could make it break, it would explode. But clowns also at the amusement parks, I guess they preceded Disney, or Disney got the idea for entertaining you while you were waiting in line. Clowns would walk up and down the lines waiting to go on the rides, trying to make people laugh and take their mind off the wait. Elephants. Not Disney elephants. Luna Park had a herd of elephants. And the herd of elephants, you could ride at Luna Park. It was one of the rides they had in Luna Park. And one of the unusual things they did, up until that time, circuses, zoos, when they were cleaning the elephants, they would use brushes, soap and water, ladders, and go up and scrub the elephants. At Luna Park, they decided, let's take them down to the ocean. They let the elephants wash themselves in the ocean. And imagine yourself being on the beach, and a half mile up the beach, you see a herd of elephants. Hey, I got to go see this. So you go up there, and their idea was hopefully you would follow the elephants back to Luna Park. And so it was kind of a moving billboard. Leaping Horse Libations. Leaping Horse Libations is our snack bar here in the at the pool area. And it's shaped like a carousel. But it's really, really named after that photo on the side, or the painting on the side, Leaping Horse. The leaping horse is depicting a diving horse with a girl on it. That would have been a show in Atlantic City, New Jersey, on the end of Steel Pier, where a horse dove into a tank of water from 40 feet above, and a girl rode it bareback. The real story is the girl, Sonoma Carver. Sonoma Carver had rode the horse for 13 years. After the second year of riding it, she hit the water the wrong way.
Oops.
Detached to both retinas. So she was blind. 1991, a Disney movie, Wild Hearts Can't Be Broken, was the story of Sonora Carver. Highly fictionalized story. I just read a comment that she had made to her sister was, they got two things right. I'm a woman and I rode a horse.
But, I love that movie. Girl.
Yeah,
so she rode it blind.
Hmm?
She rode it blind, basically.
For the 11 years, and most people did not know she was blind.
Wow.
And people asked me, well, but that sounds terrible for the horse. There was never a complaint about the horses used in diving on the at the end of Steel Pier. And they were watched very closely by all the animals.
I'm sure.
But they were, you know, these...
So we're leaving the swimming pool area and headed towards the boardwalk itself.
Just like to point out the lawn. We saw on that photo up there, the lawn in front of the hotel. Obviously, the architect knew about it too and gave us the lawn. I've seen people playing croquet. I've seen wedding pictures. Around the holidays, you'll see Easter egg hunts and all sorts of other things.
So we're headed to the boardwalk, right in the middle, basically where the Friendship boat launches to Epcot or to the Yacht and Beach Club.
My favorite place in Disney, right here.
Oh yeah.
On the boardwalk, looking across to.
This is really a different world.
It is.
When you're out here. And at night when it's all lit up.
Yeah.
It's kind of exciting. Boardwalk. Going back again to the late 1800s, hotels were starting to pop up along the beach in Atlantic City. Sand going into the lobbies was a big thing. They came up with the idea of a boardwalk. The first boardwalk was 8 feet wide and 1 mile long. And people could get into the hotels without getting their going back into the sand, and most of the sand would be off their feet. The boardwalk in Atlantic City today is 6 miles long by 65 feet wide. Our boardwalk is like all the other boardwalks that you would find along the East Coast, certainly, in that we have shopping, we have eating, and we have entertainment. This boardwalk, by the only thing really different about our boardwalk is the wood that it's made out of. It's called Ekki, E-K-K-I. It comes from Africa. It has to be cut with a diamond blade.
Oh, wow.
It's very dense, very hard, very heavy wood. But it doesn't need any protection from the elements. It's water. It's impervious to water. It's impervious to bugs. It's impervious to mold. So I suspect they did it so they never had to maintain it.
Yeah, I think so. I'm sure it's cheap.
I understand it's used more in Europe than it is here, okay. And it's used mostly in marine applications in Europe. But if we look down at our stores, the screen door, a general store just has about everything. The next little sign you see there, Character Carnival. Character Carnival is obviously Disney characters. More importantly, if you're staying here at Boardwalk and you're in the parks and you're shopping, you can have things sent back to Boardwalk. That's where you'll pick them up, at Character Carnival. Thimbles and Threads, that by the way is a store that has a proprietor of F. Thompson, one of the two main people in the development of Luna Park. You go down to Big River Grill, lunch and dinner, it's a brew pub. They make any number of their own beers. If we come over here, we can see Jelly Rolls.
Congaloosh!
Jelly Rolls is the dueling piano bar for adults at night. It's pretty crowded every night, I understand. Jelly Rolls is really named after Jelly Roll Morton. Jelly Roll Morton was a jazz pianist, composer, band leader in the early 1900s. 1915, jazz, huge in the United States. And jazz had never been put to paper. They all thought it was so free-flowing that you couldn't put jazz to paper. Jelly Rolls was the first one to put it to paper. The Jelly Roll Blues was the first jazz song that was put to paper. Atlantic Dance, dance hall. Here it is, an actual dance hall in the evening. Again, for the over 21 crowd. Back in the day, dance contest, huge thing, whether it be a Charleston contest. The most exciting dance contests I read about were the endurance contest. You would get into a contest, you paid money to get into it, and the last one standing won the money. Out of the money, they fed you while you were in the dance contest. You probably were going to be standing for more than a week.
Oh my God.
Wow.
If you see some of the old pictures, you'll see a person standing up and their partner is hanging. Their feet aren't even on the ground. You just had to be, you just couldn't sit down.
Wow.
So we're going to head down this way. I think our Surrey bikes are probably a take on the old rolling chairs on the boardwalk.
Yeah. We're headed in the direction of the Flying Fish down the boardwalk.
Flying Fish is our signature boardwalk, signature restaurant here at Boardwalk. Great restaurant, and I just heard the best recommendation for it when Bob Iger, the head of Disney, comes to Disney World. That's where he eats. So.
Okay. All right.
If you eat there, you may meet him. We're going to go in through there. Seashore Suites. Sweet shop, bake shop, ice cream. There's a lot of things about the Miss America contest. The story about Seashore Suites, you'll see the two girls up there on the front. Two young ladies went to Atlantic City for the Miss America contest and didn't win, but liked Atlantic City and opened up a sweet shop. And you'll see over the door it says, confection served with affection.
There you go.
Next to it is Casina. Casina just closed. First of the month, Casina closed. By December, a new restaurant is going to be in there.
An Italian restaurant, right?
An Italian, Trattoria Al Forno. Supposedly dishes from various regions in Italy. They're still going to have pizza. Boardwalk Bakery, all I'll say about that is if you haven't been in there, do it.
Cinnamon rolls.
Arcade, and then down at the end, ESPN Club. The structure on the top of the ESPN Club, we were talking about the high-diving horse in Atlantic City. That's a replica of the tank that the horse drove into.
We're headed inside the Flying Fish restaurant.
The decor in here is really all Coney Island decor. It's a steeplechase that you were looking at. A steeplechase where you rode a horse on a track and raced other horses on a track. The parachutes in Coney Island, that was an actual ride. It was a tower, maybe, I don't know, 10 stories or more tall. And you would sit on a bench and you would get pulled up with a real parachute, and they released you when you drifted down on a real parachute. The tower is still there.
Then you got on a horse.
You can see it from far away. Casino was the only sit-down breakfast on Boardwalk. This is where they're having the sit-down breakfast until the new restaurant opens.
Got it. So we're just passing through the Flying Fish to get inside of the soon-to-open sweet shop. So it's just a tour inside the shop with time to look around.
Atlantic City, 1920, 1921.
business, Atlantic City being on the northeast coast, had a very short season, basically June, July, and August. The businessmen were wondering, how do we get people to stay in Atlantic City or come to Atlantic City after Labor Day? Their idea was to have a bathing suit parade, a bathing beauty parade on the boardwalk. The first one was in 1921. You'll see up above in the corner there. 16-year-old girl won it. Most of the girls were relatively local, say from New York to Washington, D.C. The interesting thing I found about the parade, it was a little bit of advertising. 100,000 people showed up for the first bathing beauty parade in Atlantic City. By 1923, 500,000 people showed up. You'll see the second one, 1922 and 23. She won twice. A 17-year-old girl, and actually I read that she came in second the following year, and that's when they passed the law on the Miss America contest. The first one was just called a bathing beauty parade. After that, they called it the Miss America pageant, and when she came in second the next time, they were afraid that somebody could win a lot of times. You can only win one time. So you'll follow all the Miss Americas all the way around. I'd like to show people over here, now you get to come in and don't see a real, from the old days, a real Miss America cape and tiara and scepter and a trophy. Not sure when it came from. You can see in the photo here, probably mid to later 1920s, I would guess, just from the length of the bathing suits and the girls. That was a flapper era. And flappers were when, this is hard to believe, but young people started to have different ideas than their parents. I know that doesn't happen today, but back then the flappers, they started cutting their hair shorter. Big, exciting change. They were using makeup. They were using, they were smoking. And they were drinking. One of the things we didn't even touch on in Atlantic City in the 20s, there was prohibition going on. Atlantic City didn't really recognize prohibition. Wherever you went in Atlantic City, you could get a drink. And you can see here we have a lot of good things. And one of the things we have here is ice cream.
Hey,
right,
look at that.
Here is ice cream for you.
There we go.
So help yourself.
That's awesome.
Nice.
How come the pictures stop at 07?
Well, the Miss America contest, actually, why it ends in 207, I'm not really sure at this point. It should have stopped in 2005. The last Miss America pageant in Atlantic City.
In Atlantic City, yeah. It moved to Vegas.
2005. It went to Las Vegas. And then the year before last, there was just one pageant, and the previous year's pageant was back in Atlantic City, telecast by ABC.
Isn't there a missing year, too?
Pardon?
There's a missing year, too. Or no, there's two.
There's a couple of missing
84.
Years over here in the early years.
Okay.
Financial
for various
problems.
Reasons?
For not financial problems. They just couldn't support it.
Got it.
One of the interesting things that when you see the Miss America pageant on television,
grab an ice cream.
You only see the end of it. The show on a Sunday night when you see the Miss America pageant is the last part of a whole week's worth of things. You'll see up here girls on floats. During the week on the boardwalk, part of the Miss America pageant, even today, is what they call the Show Me Your Shoes parade. And why they
you know about this? Yeah.
Why they call it this, I'm not really sure. I suspect in the early days they didn't want the girls to show their dress that they were going to wear in the final.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
In the final one. But you'll see the names of different hotels and restaurants on these floats. They're really the ones that created the floats. They were different businesses, hotels, restaurants in Atlantic City. The one float right there, the USS Traymore. The Traymore was one of the grand hotels. And I went to the implosion of the Traymore Hotel.
Wow.
Actually, it took them 3 days to knock it down. That was a huge hotel. Some of the hotels in Atlantic City were getting up around 1,000 rooms, which at that time, and they were 15 stories tall. You'll see some programs here. And all this time period that we're talking about is really the time of Walt Disney, too, the 20s. 1923, bankrupt, went to Hollywood, opened up Disney Brothers Studios. Mm-hmm. You'll see the D23.
Absolutely.
A lot.
Yeah.
Based on that. 1925, they changed the name. Back then, the distributors wanted to see the animator's name on the product. I can remember as a kid, Walter Lantz was one that Woody Woodpecker
So they didn't want a name of a company, they wanted to see a name. So they changed the name to Walt Disney Studios in 1925. 1928, what happened? Steamboat Willie, first talking cartoon. I understand that Walt did most of the sound in his garage. The first Goofy movie only came out the year before. The Jazz Singer was in 1927. So he was right up there. 1935, first color cartoon. And in 1937 was his masterpiece. Walt could see something coming as movies got to be more and more popular. A typical movie at the time would have shown a feature film and about 10 cartoons. And he could see that movies were getting so popular that they were going to show two feature films. And to avoid being put out of business with no cartoons, he came up with a full-length animated film, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs.
Absolutely.
Two rave reviews. One of the stories about Mickey Mouse, Steamboat Willie cartoon, he couldn't find anybody to show it. He had to talk a friend in New York who owned a movie theater, the Colony Theater in New York, to show the first talking cartoon. Wow. And he said he could show it for 2 weeks. The lines were around the block. They came to see the cartoon and not the
and
movie
left.
Or anything
wow.
else that was there. So they just started showing the cartoon all the time.
Cool. Jim, how long have you been doing this, the tour?
A year
or so?
Well,
it's awesome. Yeah, it's good though.
Yeah,
I love it. Love the insight. And I could tell how we could go longer. That's for sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
yeah. Next time, yeah.
So well, that's
why I want to, guys, it's free tour and it's great and there's so much stuff going on here. And we're steps from Epcot. That's even better.
And they don't advertise it very much.
You can find it if you really look for it.
Well, everybody.
You have to, like, dig through the tour.
Yes.
Almost everybody I see, some will find it on one of the Disney websites. Where,
right.
Like for Boardwalk, if you dig, you'll see.
That's where you can find it, yeah.
More people are finding it with comments and blogs.
Yeah, that's what we're all here, right? And probably will. Which is good.
But don't talk about
it. Yeah, don't tell. That's a surprise at the end. I never said a word. Yeah, it's the surprise at the end. But it's great. We love it. Hope you guys keep doing it. You do it Wednesday,
Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Got it. And if we weren't here, who would you have today?
Nobody.
Norm. So when I say that, because last time I did it, it was me. It was me. That was it.
Days,
nobody else showed up.
I had days nobody shows up. I had days one shows up. I had days 10 show up.
Yep.
So you never
well, that's why I called ahead and said, hey, I don't make sure you're having the tour.
We have the tour. I mean, unless it's canceled. I mean, I'm there every few days.
Got it.
If somebody wants to go on the tour.
Thank you, Jim.
Okay.
We appreciate your time.
High four.
Have a great day.
We really appreciate it.
Oh, yeah, let's do a picture. We need to do a picture. We got to get one big picture with him.
Okay. On the boardwalk.
On the boardwalk, yep.
Thank you guys so much for tagging along with us for our tour of Disney's Boardwalk Resort. I'm Sam from Sam's Disney Diary and the Disney Nerds Podcast, and I'll tell you the best part of that tour was experiencing it with the Disney Nerds team. Ed, Jen, and Jimmy, along with the extended team, Nick, John, Kyle, and Kim. Absolutely a wonderful experience. I hope you enjoyed it as well. Hey, and remember, make sure you're a member of Disney Nerds group on Facebook, like the show on Facebook, the Disney Nerd Podcast, subscribe to the RSS feed at thedisneynerds.com or in the iTunes store or on Stitcher, and most important, tell somebody else about the show. We're doing it for you. Love your ideas, love your feedback, love the participation in the meet. So much more audio to cover. I can't wait to get to it all. Thanks, and we'll see ya. And a very special shout out to Scott Parker and the Florida Plunge group. Thank you so much for your participation in the meet, and I can't wait to get you guys on a future show. We'll see you soon. Until next time, Kongaloosh and Guapaloosh.